Well met, and welcome to episode 156 of the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for July the 2nd, 2017. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com. Greetings. This is Bill Walthall, and in this podcast we bring to a close our two-month discussion of Cymbeline with a directorial concept and cast, well, not really a cast, and a conclusion. If you've listened to these end-of-discussion podcasts, you know I like to cast a fictional production or film of the play with actors that I feel fit the roles based on their previous work or the impression that they would bring to the role. Sometimes I have an idea concerning an overarching concept, and occasionally we even get into staging. This play, though, presented some difficulties for me in terms of characters, which I'll explain later. So here, I went more with staging, with Cymbeline played in the quasi-round, a la the Mark Taper Forum in Los Angeles, with an intensely pronounced thrust stage and semicircular seating around it. Here, on this stage, bare with very little dressing, the entire cast of 30-plus actors would also sit in a semicircle, as if completing the circle started by the audience. The actors would sit on chairs that they could then carry on with them onto the main acting area. They would enter and exit their scenes mostly from their seats. The only thing on stage would be a kind of raised platform, roughly in the center of the formed circle, maybe 4 feet in height, 6 to 8 feet in width, and 3 feet in depth. Stairs would extend from either side, so from the front, you could see it as almost like a pyramid, except with a flat top, and you could see through it. In other words, it's empty. Beneath the platform and extending upstage from the back of the platform by 1 or 2 feet would be an opening leading down below the stage. One could climb stairs up the back to exit the opening, like when, say, Iachimo arrives from Rome. Or one could climb out of the front, as if exiting, you know, a trunk or a cave. In either case, you'd see, if you were in the audience, what was taking place below the platform as well as above the stage. The stage itself, as well as the platform, I picture as a kind of light gray, not solid, but blotchy, worn, weathered. The chairs would match. I would want much of the scenery to be comprised of lighting, moving from cold grays and whites of the palace to yellows and oranges of Rome to greens in the woods outside Milford Haven. Reds could bathe the stage during the battle sequences. Before the show, I see the cast coming out in twos and threes, interacting with each other as well as the audience. Some might do vocal warm-ups, stretches, and the like. Some may even enter from the house. As the house lights go down, all actors will take their seats, save for one. The one playing Cymbeline will take his chair and carry it with him to the top of the platform. He will sit there as the first scene takes place. I'm not sure if I would keep the conversation between the two lords or somehow edit it so that it becomes more of a choric prologue. If we do the latter, I would want it delivered somewhat chorally by some of the cast members. Regardless, as the characters are mentioned in the speeches, those actors would then take their place as well on the platform or on its side stairs, so that by the end of the scene, a kind of family portrait tableau will have been created for the audience. In this way, we can introduce the many, many characters of the play in such a manner as to make it clear who is who when they enter later in the play. I think the platform could be used creatively throughout the show. Imogen could sleep on it as Iachimo crawls out of the space beneath it. Arviragus could carry Imogen, Fidile, from the understage cave onto the stage and lay her body in front of the platform. When Bellarius returns with Cloten's decapitated body, he could place the corpse on the platform so that when Imogen awaits, the body is discovered more than revealed. The spirits of Posthumus's family could rise out of the trap, if I keep that sequence. I'm torn. I mean, I like the sequence because how could you cut "Thanks, Jupiter"? But it also adds to the 55-car pileup that is the ending of the play. And yet, is that family reunion and appearance by Jupiter really necessary for the ending of the play? I'm not so sure. But if I do keep it, I would want Jupiter to be more of a vocal than physical presence, performed either chorically or by the same actor who's playing Cymbeline, to equate a heavenly rule with a terrestrial one. I think there can be a great deal of gender switching in the roles to create a more gender-balanced cast. Easily, one of the missing sons, the doctor, some messengers, and lords could be swapped. Hell, the RSC even gender-switched Cymbeline and the Queen. And I thought it worked, as could Filario and Pisanio. Conceivably, you could probably make Bellarius Bellaria, but I'm not sure. The dress would be modern-ish, and while you could get some idea of character status through their clothing, they should appear to be more rehearsal-type clothes, with the occasional period accessories rather than fully representational costuming. The costumes, like the stage around it, would be relatively drab in color, with occasional pops of color and flourishes. The key here, for me at least, is how to whittle down that script. That Act 5 is almost interminable. There's a part of me that would want to savagely cut the last act and present it that way. Another of me says, what the hell, go with it as it is, but then also present Shaw's Cymbeline refinished as well, and run these two, maybe even these three, in repertory. Maybe make it a luck of the draw to see which one the audience sees on any given night. With such a production, I think the cast takes a backseat to the concept. Or at least, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Of course, that's mainly because I'd want to play around with the gender casting so much that, with all the switches, I don't even know where to begin with the casting. Save for Issa Rae from HBO's Insecure as Inogen, if we take a more self-parodic take, which is a real possibility here. Without a more comic slant, I think Sarah Hyland, the older sister from Modern Family, would work. There's an interesting innocence going on there. But honestly, I can't even think of a posthumous. Shakespeare fans, need a poster to hang in your room? Teachers, need some nifty handouts for your students to peruse as you introduce them to the Bard? Or are you just in the mood for some printable versions of some of the cool infographics found on this website? Well, regardless of how you answered those questions, I've got a scratch for that itch, a solution for that problem. Check out the Bill Shakespeare Project page on the Teachers Pay Teachers website. You can find character maps for Romeo and Juliet and Julius Caesar, previewing the characters and their relationships to one another. I've also got geographical maps so your students can wrap their heads around travels within the plays Troilus and Cressida. Yes, even TNC gets some love. All's Well That Ends Well as well. See what I did there. Plus Pericles and Othello. There's also handouts on the so-called history in Macbeth and Julius Caesar, time in Romeo and Juliet, and violence in Titus Andronicus. Also, you'll find entire packets of handouts for both King Lear and Macbeth, including scene-by-scene timelines and the interactions as well as relationships between the characters. And I'll be adding even more soon. Plus, this is where you can find the printable version of the new and improved periodic table of Shakespeare. Some of these are for free, and some are for purchase, but all can be found on the Bill Shakespeare Project page on teacherspayteachers.com. Oh, and if you want to purchase a pre-printed poster-sized version of that periodic table, well then head on over to the Bill Shakespeare Project page on redbubble.com. Links to both of these sites can be found in the left-hand margin of this website. So, Cymbeline. What the hell? I didn't really like this play. I mean, it's such a hodgepodge. The cuckoldry plot, which began as a comic trope, then darkened by Shakespeare for Much Ado, then went pitch black, no pun intended, in Othello. Here our play seems to split the difference between the two genres. Posthumus orders the killing of Inogen and thinks it's accomplished, only it isn't, and by the end they're reunited. Tragicomedy. I know, I've decided to use the term romance instead, but damned if in this respect, Cymbeline doesn't fit the former moniker. You get what is, for me, pages upon pages of exposition, all to set up a play where plot goes almost too quickly. There's the 55-car pileup of revelations and resolutions in that last scene, the weird Iacomo in the box scene, the decapitation of Cloten, and thanks, Jupiter. I lean towards agreeing with Bloom, a shocker I know, on this one. Maybe this is self-parody. But can you successfully play it that way? I'm not sure if that's the way the RSC played it in that cinema broadcast last year. I remember finding it funny, but I can't remember if the comedy was organic or pushed over the edge. And yet, there was stuff in this that I liked. The knowing comedy at moments in that last scene. Clotten's obsession. So in the end, I just don't know how I feel about this play. It fascinates me more than Pericles. I think it's probably a better play. It certainly doesn't have the flaws of that earlier play, but I didn't enjoy Cymbeline as much as I did Pericles, or at least as much as I've enjoyed that play on stage. Cymbeline has its moments, but I just don't know. I've never seen it on stage. Now, if I had to rank it, and I do, I'd put it behind Pericles, as number two so far in the romances, but a bit further back in the canon, maybe about two-thirds of the way down, like, say, 21, just behind Richard II. So, thanks, Jupiter, and goodbye, Cymbeline. Next up, we get another self-deluded non-cuckold and a sad tale that's best for winter, just as we're heading into summer. May we escape the bear. If you've enjoyed this podcast, but you haven't been following along with our daily blog entries since our last regular podcast, you've missed out on subjects including English paper, Prometheus's Byronic hero from Frankenstein to Battlestar Galactica, best Father's Day gift ever, Cymbeline speech study, the wake-up call, Cymbeline production questions, part two, Cymbeline directing the stage. How? Midpoint, dramatic, not thematic? Inogen, again. Some thoughts and unanswered questions on Cymbeline. Cymbeline, by the numbers. And Cymbeline, wrap-up. So, if you'd like more in-depth discussions, or just want a daily fix, check out the blog entries at thebillshakespeareproject.com, or become a fan of our Facebook page and our Twitter feed. Remember that those social media outlets are more for Shakespeare news and notes than for discussions of our current play under study. Also, if you have any question or comment about this or any other Bill Shakespeare Project podcast or blog entry, you can always lob me an email at bill@thebillshakespeareproject.com. And join us again for our next podcast when we'll kick off The Winter's Tale with a plot synopsis and an intro. Hope to see you then. You've been listening to the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for July the 2nd, 2017. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com. And we shall see thee anon.